Siren Radio.
Excellent. And as we move straight away into our next feature, which we already spoke about in the first part of the programme, parents still shelling out for kids' holidays even when they're adults. 77% of all adults who went on holiday with their parents had at least part of it paid for by the parents and so on. Outrageous. But to address this and maybe actually explain some of the rationale behind this Enterprise Rent-A-Car survey, who better than an expert in families, an all-round wonderful person? It's the fabulous Jenny Trent Hughes. How are you, Jenny?
Good morning. How are you?
Delighted to touch base with your good self as ever. A life strategist, coach, social commentator, motivational speaker. You've got it all in many ways. And you're currently planning a trip away with your 23-year-old son. Now, is he paying, Jenny?
Funnily enough, he actually is, because after years of struggling to keep him fed and clothed and all of that, he got a job straight out of university making tons of money. Yay! Sometimes it does work. So he's actually paying for the whole thing.
Well, that's good news from that perspective.
But years and years and years of me paying, and we made a deal. He's going to pay for this one to make up for what I've paid for, and then I'm going to pay for the next one.
Okay, well, that seems as though, again, you've got the negotiating policy there. Now, we have in the studio a young man who's in his second year of a journalism degree at the University of Lincoln. That's Christian Arkabovich. You've had a chance to look at the article, Christian, and the research. Any thoughts or questions for Jenny?
Obviously, I know a lot of teenagers, children, or
bank of mum and dad,
even early 20s and stuff like that. But the research, what have you, how many, is it a lot, is it a large proportion of, say, 18 to 25?
83% of the time parents are covering the holiday costs for their adult
83%.
Children. 83%. I mean, that is a significant finding, Jenny. I mean, were you shocked by the results themselves?
Well, you see, the thing that I don't, that I kind of don't understand is, yes, there is money involved, but money actually really has very, very little to do with the whole question. So I work a lot with family things, and when I went out with Enterprise Rent-A-Car to find out, because a lot of family things are changing, and this topic was very big, going out, you know, going away on holiday, parents and children, and we wanted to find out why. And the fact of the matter is that the money is incidental. It's how family structures are changing, and a lot of the times now, your children are your best friends, or you feel your parents are your best friends, and it runs across the gamut. So it's not that people are going on holiday, you know, with their parents because they can't afford to go on holiday on their own. It's really not about that. It's about improving the strength and quality of family relationships.
I often heard our parents often say, oh, it's the last chance we actually have to have a whole family holiday together. It's, you know, because after that they'll be off to university and so on. Is that actually changing as a result of that, that actually more and more families are saying, look, what the hey, forget the challenges and trials and tribulations, we'll actually head overseas or do a staycation, but we'll still work as a group together?
Absolutely. And you'll find that a lot of the times now, you know, it's the old question of we all used to live in a village and stay in a village and we were all close to each other. Now you can have three children, one's in Manchester, you're in Lincoln, one's in London, one's in Plymouth. You know, and so a family vacation becomes an opportunity for the siblings to see each other, for you all to be together as a family in a way that we've lost over the years. So it does a lot of things. And also, you know, you'll find a lot of the times mothers and daughters dress the same, fathers and sons listen to similar music. It's not the way it used to be when most of us were young, when your parents were a completely different generation. Now there's a lot of blurred lines. And so it is like going on holiday with your friends, but even better.
Ellie, being part of this generation, with a generation gap to some extent, I mean, what Jenny's been saying, do you think that sort of chimes with yourself?
Yes, very much. In that I have a very close relationship with my stepson. Mm. He'll be going on holiday with his dad later in the year, and it's very different. The problem is, possibly in some ways, it's too close. I mean, there were things that I would never have dreamt of telling my parents. And there are things that I wish I never knew about my stepson.
yes, I have some of those as well.
and I don't know, in some ways I'm very proud that he sees me in that way. But in other ways...
Too much information.
Yeah.
I was just getting ready to say, there's a phrase that the kids all know. It's TMI, which is the aforementioned too much information. And when you start getting uncomfortable, just say TMI, hold your hands up and say TMI, TMI. And they know to stop. It works.
As opposed to TGFI, which is, thank goodness, it's Friday, but still, that's another line entirely. Jenny, where can people go to find out more information about the things we've been talking about today and, of course, the survey and more?
Well, you can go to enterprise.co.uk, and also there's a little YouTube, there's a kind of a YouTube channel. So if you go to the main website, you can see what they have on there, and then you can also link through to the YouTube channel. But I'm telling you, I've been doing it for years now, going on holiday with kids, and it's fantastic. And driving, perfect. You can stop where you want. One person goes to the pencil factory, one goes to the water park. It's a really, really great way to do it.
Pencil factories and water parks. As
yes.
Made well.
And shopping. Always shopping.
Always the retail therapy. Jenny, it's been awesome, as we knew it would be, as ever. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us yourself?
It has been fantastic.
So I take it we can return to you in the not-too-distant future. You will be kind enough to connect with us once more?
Absolutely.
Yay! Sound of Rod Argent and Hold Your Head Up. So we move from parents playing for their children's holidays and adults and connecting all sorts of other aspects there to a fairly serious and important aspect which ties into the notion of avoiding unpleasant activities going to hit you if you're suffering from all manner of sort of challenges. In fact, let's be honest, it's the Be Clear on Cancer campaign. It's launched today to encourage people to look before they flush and to talk about this and how we really need to be checking our excretory products on a regular basis. We're delighted to welcome back to the programme leading media medic extraordinaire. It is, of course, the fabulous Dr. Dawn Harper. How are you, Dr. Dawn?
What an intro. Very well after that, thank you.
Well, as ever, a delight to connect with your good self. Although this one, as possibly my introduction demonstrated, is one that we kind of find difficult to talk about, really. And we sort of think, well, should we do that? Should we work through that? Is it, you know, is that something we really need to start addressing? And that's part of this campaign by Public Health England to actually sort of be clear on cancer.
That's absolutely it, Alex. And thank you for being being brave enough to talk about it. Urine isn't sexy, is it? But it's really, it is really, really important. Over 19,000 people every year in the UK are diagnosed with either kidney or bladder cancer. Now, the thing about that, and actually across the board with cancers, is the earlier it's picked up, the better the outlook. So what we are encouraging with the Be Clear on Cancer campaign, that the simple message is just look before you flush. And what you're looking for is the signs of blood in your urine. And that can be a whole range of colours, actually. It can be anything from very pale pink, if the blood is very diluted. It may look like fresh blood. It could be pillar box red, or it could even look like weak black tea or cola. So anything between those spectrums could be blood in your urine. And what we're encouraging people to do is, if you notice that, even if it's only once, please, please come and see your GP. I know people worry about wasting GP's time, but this is one occasion when you're absolutely not. We want to see you. The chances are it'll be nothing serious, but actually, if we pick up bladder and kidney cancer early, we can cure it. You know, your outlook is so much better. So the whole thing is, look before you flush. If you notice anything from pale pink to that sort of cola kind of colour, anything within that range, let your GP know.
Ellie, if I can come to you briefly, Ellie Sample, University of Lincoln Director of Communications, Development and Marketing, and we're talking about the medical school that's emerging. Your thoughts on what Dawn's been saying?
Well, absolutely vital. I mean, you know, so many people suffer from cancers nowadays, and it's horrendous. And we're very fortunate here at the university with top three, I believe it is, for health and allied sciences research in the UK. And one of the researches that we do is around proton therapy, and you'll know Professor Nigel Allinson and his work on proton therapy, which means that we can treat cancers which were previously impossible to treat, such as cancers in children and cancers in specific hard-to-target regions in the body that were near vital organs. And controlling the radiation therapy was something that was very important. And there will be three new proton therapy centres by 2020 as a result of this work that we're doing here.
And in many ways, Dawn, that's one of the good things that actually, as you said, if we can check, if we can identify early enough, then that whole notion of presently 19,000 people being diagnosed with bladder or kidney cancer, or 8,000 people dying from those diseases, those figures can be improved upon.
Well, certainly the 8,000 people dying absolutely can be improved upon. I'm very fond of Lincoln, actually. We've filmed up with you quite a lot, and you do some fantastic work up there. And some of the advances that are being made into the treatments of cancer are not only improving the outlook, but they're also actually often better tolerated with fewer side effects. So I know people find, you know, the big C word very, very frightening, and I completely get that. And there will be times when some people may be frightened, and they don't then want to report because they don't want the diagnosis. And what I'd really like to say to those people is, if you delay because of embarrassment or fear or whatever, then actually you are potentially making things more difficult to treat. And coming earlier means that we've got a much greater chance of treating you and curing you. So, you know, don't delay. Simply looking before you flush. Honestly, such a simple thing, it could save your life.
You do assume, don't you, Dr. Dawn, you do assume that it's nothing. And I think, you know, this is something that we all do. And it's, how do you know? Because if it's just a one-off, and you can't help but feel, if you went to your GP with, oh, I looked down the toilet and it was a bit pink, that the GP's...
And if it's not Dr. Dawn Harper and they say something like, stop wasting my time.
Yes, that's what they're going to say.
Some people may think that. And one of the reasons I really wanted to get involved with this campaign with Public Health England is to say we absolutely won't, OK? Even if it's just the once. This is one of the occasions when your doctor really does want to see you. You are not wasting their time. They will take you seriously. They will investigate it. As I say, in most cases, it won't be anything serious. But if you report it early, you know, we're really keen to see people as soon as possible because we know that we can improve their outlook if they come and see us.
I have to say, my experience of the NHS has been absolutely fantastic. And whenever there's anything that could potentially be serious, you do find it is the most amazing system in the entire world.
That's so lovely to hear, actually. I always think the NHS is a bit like mum, you know. So
yeah.
For most of us living in the UK, she's always been around. Mm. And as such, it's quite easy to take her for granted and perhaps even find fault. But she's very much got your best interests at heart. And, you know, if she wasn't around, gosh, we'd miss her.
I think that's really beautiful. I think that's a lovely way of putting it.
I'm just filling up already. I mean, Dawn has already provided us with the quote of the programme so far with Urine Isn't Sexy. I mean, that's wonderful. I put that into
T-shirts. I could dispute. There are
well, things.
There,
yeah, no, perhaps we won't go there. No, please. Otherwise,
sorry, Dawn.
We're into the other Channel 4 series, Born Naughty? Which is a different line entirely. So step away from that. Christy, any final thoughts from yourself?
I think it's definitely a good thing to talk about the symptoms, I always feel, like, because we all know about cancer and everyone is, at one point, I always feel worried about the fact they may have it or something like that.
Christian, your age range, you're not in the sort of 50 back record, you're 20, 21?
Yeah, but I still, people my age were suddenly, like, there might be something really, really little, you might feel like a lump or something like that. And everybody gets scared about it, even when they don't really recognise the symptoms or know about it. So I feel like talking about the symptoms is a very, very important thing, because it does, at some point, like, alleviate someone's sort of terror at one point, thinking, oh my God.
I think that's the message that comes across today. And Dr. Dawn Harper, I think you've been more than capable in terms of delivering that, as we knew you would be. There are the usual two questions we need to put to your good self at this stage. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Dr. Dawn Harper?
Fantastic telelink with you today.
Marvellous. So I take it you'll be able to return to us in the not-too-distant future. You must drop into the studio when you're next in Lincoln, of course.
Oh, I would love to. I love Lincoln. We've done quite a lot of embarrassing bodies filming from Lincoln and really enjoyed my days there.
Well, would you perhaps come and do one of our great lives talks?
Whoa.
Because we've had Dr. Michael Mosley.
Got big competition there.
At the end of the day, Dr. Dawn Harper.
He's not as pretty as you, Dawn. I think we could do with some top female feminism totty coming through.
We'll send the contacts through. I won't possibly endorse that line from our director of communications at that particular stage there, Dr. Dawn, but hopefully we'll see you in the not-too-distant future. Take care now.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Have a splendid day.
Bye, Dawn.
Bye.
South on Lakeshore Drive, getting into town, just slipping on my own LSD, Friday night trouble bound. It's Friday night and you're looking clean, too early to start the rounds. A 10-minute ride from the Gold Coast back makes you show your pleasure bound. It's 4 o'clock in the morning and all the people have gone away. Just you and your mind, you lay
sunshine's fine in the morning time. Tomorrow is another day. And there ain't no road just like it anywhere I found. Running south on Lakeshore Drive, getting into town, and just sneaking on by on LSD, finding that trouble bound.
So in terms of upcoming treats, Gloria Hannaford is joining us on the programme in the near future. Next week, actually, talking about estate agents cashing in on British folks' reluctance to haggle over fees. It's an ongoing thing. She says it with Angela Rippon. It's a standard thing. Rip off Britain. We mustn't do that at all. And a whole heap of other goodies will be taking place as far as the Midweek Drive is actually concerned. Don't forget, this evening, of course, it's the Stone Tapes, which will be featuring a review, Ellie, of Incredibles 2 by one of our Welsh correspondents, Starburst magazine writer Robin Pearce.
We're so excited!
It is, yes.
The Incredibles 1 was amazing, but why has it taken so long to get to
14 years.
Two
of the original cast have passed on, moved into a different sort of state of existence. So, you know, the Craig T. Nelson is still there. And, of course, Holly Hunter is still doing
this. Oh, Holly Hunter's amazing.
So good news as far as that's concerned. Yeah. And lots of other things happening on Stone Tapes. That's this evening. Sorry. It gets its airtime just after 7 o'clock.
And then it's Love Island.
Yeah, you could do that. You could probably do both if you want to listen to the podcast and work through that basis. I'm not.
Just in case you're worrying about what to do this evening.
Well, clearly, is there a final in Love Island? Is it like I'm a Celebrity,
two
get me
weeks.
Out of here?
There's another 2 weeks. 2 weeks, I think. Is right. that right, Christian? More you're young. Yeah, you know about these things.
It's about 2 weeks now, I think. And well. Then Danny Dyer's dad comes into it and everything like that.
That is Danny Dyer.
Yeah, Danny Dyer, father of Danny Dyer.
Because clearly you obviously name your offspring after yourself, really.
Well, you could, Alex. You could have an Alexandra.
Yeah, I could, but I don't. So there we are. So there we are. A new leadership index created by Domino's in conjunction with the Centre for Economics and Business Research has revealed an interesting divide between the North and South. Surprise.
Shocker.
When it comes to nurturing leadership talent. Mm-hmm. And we'll be speaking to Simon Wallace and Head of Macroeconomics for CEBR, Nina Scrio, in a few moments' time to actually talk a bit more about that. And whether we're surprised by this, where we sort of think, well, it's just what it's all about, what the UK's leading hotspots actually are. It would seem that larger cities, including Manchester, Liverpool and Birmingham, are surprisingly lagging behind others when it comes to nurturing leadership talents.
Oh, are we defining how we're nurturing leadership talents?
That is a question I know you will be putting to these two fine folk in a matter of moments on the Midweek Drive.
Thank you, Alex.
Morning edition. We shall proceed ever onwards, because when I go, I want to go out dancing. Thank you, Kylie.
No one wants to stay at home. Nobody wants to be alone. When you come knocking, I'll be at your door. I don't ever want to stop. I'm gonna give it all I've got. And when they ask me, who could ask for more? Can't stand still, won't slow down. When I go out, I wanna go out dancing. When I go out, I wanna go out dancing.
we can say we did it all, the never ending of a perfect day. Can't stand still, I won't slow down.
So you shall. So you shall go to the ball, Kylie, because that's the sort of Australian person that you actually are. Still to come, of course, we've also got to mention we will be speaking to Dame Helena Morrissey, a philanthropist and founder of the 30% Club, which, of course, was her campaign a few years ago, which has stalled slightly, but she set herself getting at least 30% female in every boardroom in the land.
Excellent.
Which, again, makes perfect sense. Up next, of course, as mentioned, Simon Wallace, Nina Scarrow. So what are the UK's leadership hotspots? The new leadership index have suggested that the UK's leading urban spots for nurturing current and upcoming leadership talent may have a few surprises in terms of where does Middlesbrough, for instance, Luton, Birmingham, where does Lincoln actually sit in this whole system? To address some of the facts with respect to the research and how leadership skills are being developed, who better than the CEO of the Domino's Pizza Group? That would be the wonderful Simon Wallace. How are you, Simon?
Very well, thank you.
And also head of macroeconomics at the Centre for Economics and Business Research. That'd be the wonderful Nina Scarrow. How are you, Nina?
Doing very well, thank you.
Excellent. Nina, let's come to you first in terms of this particular survey and the leadership index. Explain for the benefit of our listener how this is calculated, how it's working through that. And yes, I have been looking to see where does Lincoln sit on this particular map of things from that point of view.
Well, we've defined leadership using four different criteria. So we look at the seniority of the workforce in the city. We look at the educational levels of the people living there, as well as what the average earnings are and the job density of the city, so how many jobs there are per capita. And we actually look at 60 biggest cities around the country in terms of GVA and economic contribution. So I think this time around, Lincoln didn't quite make that cut, so it's actually not one of the places we...
But at least we're small and perfectly formed. That's the important thing.
Yes, you have that going for you that time.
Is there not a danger that you're measuring affluence rather than leadership within that, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I don't think so, because actually, if we were measuring affluence, I think you would have seen a more direct relationship between the richest cities and the most economically important cities. And actually, what we've seen are a lot of smaller places.
Exactly. I mean, this is the shocking, that number one with in the Domino's Leadership Index is Aldershot. Aldershot, for heaven's sake, followed by Crawley, Oxford, Reading, Exeter, Cambridge. It's not until you really kind of move down the list that you get to the Manchesters, the Newcastles, the Liverpools, and so on. I mean, were you surprised at all by those particular findings? Was it something which you thought, I don't know, or was it as you'd expect? Let's go to Simon for this. What were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think we were surprised that many of these larger, what we'd consider to be more economically important cities, like the Manchesters and Newcastles that you mentioned. But they seem to be punching below their weight in terms of their economic status. But you mentioned things that cities like Aldershot and Crawley and how they're punching above that weight. I think that what that demonstrates to us that there is great opportunities for cities like Lincoln that weren't named in the study. And what it plays back to us is that there are large pools of untapped talent everywhere in the UK and that could help plug a leadership gap post-Brexit.
You mentioned the B word, I knew we had to, but it had to sort of straight in there, Simon. If we're talking about the UK hospitality sector, looking at some of the figures here, you're looking to recruit and train more than 200,000 workers a year just to stand still, which is basically the equivalent to actually recruiting Warrington or Luton on an annual basis. That's pretty significant. And again, as you talked about that, I mean, clearly one of the ways in which these skills gaps were being sorted when we were all happily members of the European Union was, of course, we did have that connection. Is that something which you're worried about, that you're concerned about, or is it a case of, we'll muddle through somehow?
Well, I think certainly we are concerned that there's potentially fewer people set to come to the UK in a post-Brexit world. But that's why we think more needs to be done to develop homegrown talent in the UK. Last year, we launched our Team Skills Programme, which is our training materials, and made those available free online for team members, for potential employees, to look at the tools that we used to develop the leaders of tomorrow. Over the last year, in fact, we put 18,000 team members through key leadership and team working skills through our Team Skills Programme.
So, in terms of the actual skill set that we actually need, I mean, Nina, come to your good self, what are we looking for in terms of nurturing the best leaders? I mean, you know, Ellie, I'm sure we work in the higher educational industry, and we work through that. We're talking about leadership. We have Christian here as an undergraduate, all sorts of, you know, we kind of know the sort of skill set we're looking for, but what are the sort of aspects which you would say, Nina, are kind of critical to ensure that we are getting the best leadership areas possible? Like the next Gareth Southgates, for instance.
I think I'll actually let Simon take this one. I know he has some quite formed opinions on it.
Okay, Simon, over to you.
Right. Great, if we could find another...
Somebody make a decision, please. Take the answer.
Southgate. We think there's five principles of leadership that we try and train and develop amongst our leaders. The first of those is to have effective problem-solving skills and be an effective decision-maker. The ability to create ambitious and high-performing teams. To inspire team members to raise the bar on their own performance, influencing and empowering team members to achieve more, and of course having great communication skills, which is something I think Gareth Southgate taught us all.
Exactly. In fact, let's make him Prime Minister now. He's got a tube station looked after him, so we'll go on that basis. Is there a way in which universities can help and assist with this? Is that something where within the Domino's Pizza Group you actually say, it shows that you're sort of demonstrating that? I mean, can we teach these things, or is it a case of, no, a good leader is born, not made?
Well, I think that universities and schools have a role to play, government has a role to play, but businesses have a role to play. We've all got a responsibility in helping create and develop the leaders of tomorrow.
Okay. Dominic, Domino's there. Christian.
Dominic.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I was looking behind myself. And I was like,
is he here?
I'm still trying to get my head around how all this has been sort of graded, like grading the cities from sort of top to bottom.
There's a lot of data here.
I'm not really very good with numbers but just trying to get my head around it.
Nina, from your point of view, macroeconomics, the very name itself can be scary to some people because you're dealing with those macroeconomics things within the Centre of Economics and Business Research. You know, Middlesbrough comes in at number 53, Hull is at number 58 and so on. And as you said, is it a case of somehow simplifying this? Can we kind of ease it through? Or is it a case of sometimes even using these algorithms to kind of calculate these data, things can shift on a regular basis, a bit like stocks and shares?
Well, I think the system can perhaps seem more intimidating and complicated than it really is. So when what the methodology really boils down to is that we look at the four criterion that I mentioned before, so seniority of workforce, educational attainment, compensation, and job density, and we take all of these cities, or rather the local authorities within the cities, we look at how they perform on each measure, and then to enable us to combine them all together, we just rescale them, and the best performing area gets 100%, the worst performing area gets 0%, and everything in between gets a scaled proportional score. And then we really just average up those four categories to get the overall score and sort of rank them from highest to lowest. So it is a huge amount of data and requires a rather meticulous approach, but I think it's also quite intuitive and not so complex after all.
So then it kind of makes sense that a town, a smaller town perhaps, down south in a more affluent sort of area, would outperform and come higher than, say, Manchester or something, which obviously has a lot of wealthy people, but then a lot of poorer people. So the data, I don't really sort of get how
it's
the data
a connection
sort of
between
shows
the ranking by economic importance and the actual leadership index. I think that's the sort of the interesting thing that comes out of this, which we can talk about ad length and ad infinitum. But how can people find out more information and see this full index? Because we don't have time, obviously, to read all the cities that are actually there, including Southend-on-Sea, a leadership index of number 20 with an economic importance of 37. Where can people go to find out more details about this?
Before you do that, Alex, can I just remind you that we've got our Being Brilliant session on the 18th of August here at the University of Lincoln. So if, Simon, if you want to come to that from Domino's Pizza, if you'd like to come up to our Being Brilliant session, you can learn everything you need to know about leadership.
We knew that Simon Wallace was indeed a brilliant person as Chief Executive Officer of the Domino's Pizza Group, but that's a wonderful offer, Ellie, and I'm sure we can coordinate that in another stage. But Nina, where can people go to find out the data, the hard number crunching, if they want to follow through on what we've been talking about today?
So people can find all of the information on the corporate section of Domino's website, which is just at dominoes.co.uk.
Inevitably, Simon, if we followed that through, we should have a two-for-one day with Simon and Nina coming up for that sort of basis. But perhaps I best not go there.
And she's on top.
She's on a Tuesday.
Exactly. We'll do it on a Tuesday. Simon Wallace, Chief Executive Officer of the Domino's Pizza Group, and Nina Scarrow, Head of Macroeconomics. I think it's food for thought in more ways than one. We will speak again. Take care now.
Thank you.
and say, it's a small planet, we want to look after it, we want to ensure that our environment is actually kept in good, pristine condition. In fact, 92% of people on a recent survey want to minimise their impact on the environment, and yet only 31% think it's their responsibility, with over a quarter of British folks saying that they exaggerate their environmental credentials simply to maintain social status. This is not good enough, and to address some of the key factors that need to be put in place, who better than a genuine superheroine? She's the awesomely talented founder of the 30% Club, amongst other things, the fabulous Dame Helena Morrissey, OBE. Good morning, Helena. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. I'm a little worried now about how I can live up to that.
Of course, simply, easily, Helena. Let's just take us through this particular finding that, again, I suppose intuitively we might have thought, well, yes, we kind of thought that might be the case, that people actually say more than they actually do, and adjust things from that point of view. But ultimately, we're all responsible for the environment in which we live.
Definitely. I think the reason why we did the survey was a couple of things. We wanted to just corroborate that intuition, as you mentioned, that actually we might be saying we're doing more than we're actually doing, because clearly talk is kind of cheap, but we're not going to actually see the planet that we want to see if we just talk about it rather than act. And secondly, I guess if we can understand what holds people back from doing more, then perhaps we'll be able to offer some suggestions about taking more steps. I do think there is a collective responsibility, as you allude to. It's not the responsibility of just the government or just individuals or just business. But together, I think we could really create a faster progress towards a lower carbon world.
And there is that notion that, yes, you may not be able to change the world, but you can change your own individual actions. And however small those things might appear to be, if we don't make a start, we're never going to get there.
Exactly. I mean, I've seen that in issues like gender equality as well, that if people are all taking small steps in the same direction, then you can very quickly get quite a high momentum developing and really create change, the change that we want to see. Obviously, I'm not glossing over the fact that sometimes it might seem overwhelming and daunting that there are these big issues around us, and obviously not just one issue, but many issues. But I do think that we have more power than we sometimes think.
We mentioned at the start that you're founder of the 30% Club. Just for listeners who may be unaware of that, that's to ensure that boardrooms are equally represented, or at least there's at least a third of staff and boardroom executives that are actually female, which is, again, you might sort of think, well, it's a no-brainer, but it's taking time to get there.
That's definitely the case. I mean, I started the 30% Club in 2010. The good news is at that point, there were only 12.5% of FTSE, the top 100 companies, their boardrooms were women. So 12.5% was the starting point, and we're now at the frustratingly close 28.9%. So we have made progress, but it hasn't been in a straight line, and it hasn't been as fast as I would have liked to see, particularly over the last couple of years. And there's a perception, I think, that people sort of take one step in that direction in that particular case, and then we've sort of been there, done that. Whereas actually what I'm much keener to see is a sustainable, meaningful change, and not just in the boardroom, of course, but right the way from schoolroom to boardroom, a different society where men and women are much more equal.
One of the wonderful things about the recent FIFA World Cup was the fact that an awful lot of people from an awful lot of different countries seem to be getting on well together. And that's been manifested on a whole range of other aspects, even, dare I say it, on parts of the global stage as well from that point of view. In terms of responsibility for the planet, is it a case that ultimately, without talking about people revolutions or various other elements, we need to kind of ensure that it's no good turning around saying, well, we're okay in Britain, but if those French people don't sort out their act, or if those China, etc., etc., we need to kind of acknowledge that we are working together on this.
Definitely. And I think, you know, the Paris, there was agreement in Paris, nearly 200 countries signed up to this limiting global warming. And that was a real big moment because, again, signing up is not quite the same as acting upon it. But before
just
that,
speak to the White House occupant at present, really. He'll have all sorts of things to say.
Yeah, the thing is, in reality, though, the green economy and the renewables energy businesses in America are much, much bigger together than, say, for example, the coal industry at this point. So some of it is, in his case, a bit of a sort sort of window dressing of all of that, whereas actually there's such unstoppable momentum on a grassroots kind of level. People want to have, you know, they want to drive cars that are right for the environment, as long as they are well priced. And clearly, if a lot, as I said earlier, a lot of people doing things in the same direction can really overcome a message that just might be out of sync with what we want to see. But I think rest of the world is pretty much in alignment on this issue and on a political level as well. And, you know, China has been doing a lot, and obviously they were one that had the most high pollution previously. So I think we need to welcome latecomers to the party and, again, do our bit, whether it's as country, as individuals, or as companies.
Elon Musk would presumably say the solution is to move to Mars. Would you have any sort of thoughts on that? Say, no, let's sort ourselves out, or do we need to do both?
Yeah, I mean, I Mars would be sort of low down on my list of personal priorities. I think we can just look around us. Sometimes someone like Elon Musk is very inspiring for talking about, you know, big things, and he obviously has the resources personally to fund really sort of blue sky thinking projects. But in the meantime, I think a lot of us can do things every day. And we already found, again, from this survey that we've done, that most people, or a majority of people at least, are, for example, recycling any plastic bags. They're making much less use of plastic bags, partly because obviously there's a financial disincentive to use plastic, and it's been such a big campaign that it's very much in everybody's consciousness. And I think we just need to broaden that out to other areas, and that can widen our deepen our impact and create this world that we really want to see.
And from the perspective of nudge theory, to use a public relations sense, is it a case of we're slowly moving in that direction and we're looking at an evolution rather than a revolution, or do we actually say, no, we need to act now, tomorrow, today, from this moment on?
Well, I'm a bit of both kind of person, because I think you need sort of punctuation points, and which is why, again, we're trying to do a bit of a campaign right now. There's obviously been a big campaign around plastic straws, which is great. You know, one needs kind of focus. As individuals, we need, I believe, sort of a sense that actually there's an urgency and that we should act and we can play our part and take responsibility. And I thought it was good in our survey that people were saying they actually did feel guilty if they weren't doing their bit. So that's great. But also, this is not a sort of, you know, one-shot wonder. You know, it's not just a question of doing one thing and then we can all relax about it. It is about changing the way we live, the way we use our resources, about being more thoughtful and respecting each other and helping each other to use our resources sensibly as well. So I think we have to do a bit of both.
The futurist Ramaz Naum is a noted optimist about such areas and says actually the future is going to be good. Asking yourself, Helena, are you intrinsically optimistic? Would you say actually as we look towards the third decade of the 21st century that we're approaching, that actually we'll get through this?
I am. I mean, I am an optimist by nature, so I have to caveat my answer that way. But I think that the upheavals that we're seeing that can be in some ways so depressing. So when we, particularly politically, but also there are uncertainties around future employment with artificial intelligence and so forth. I think those upheavals are moments to seize and to really create the plan for the future, rather than sort of sometimes we drift along. And I have seen that with gender equality. It's not just wishful thinking. I have seen people realize, actually, you know what, 21st century, it makes absolutely no sense at all to have, you know, 10% female representation at various levels of lots of different organizations. We're so, you know, out of touch with the high educational attainment from girls and ambition of women as well. So I think we get these moments that we should turn to our advantage and try to see through the difficulties in getting to the objectives that we want, which is, you know, a better world for our children, rather than, and I don't feel defeatist, I don't feel it's inevitable that it's a step back that they'll be facing.
Well, certainly at the University of Lincoln, with Professor Mary Stewart being one of the rare female vice-chancellors in heading up the whole system, we're doing our little bit in the East Midlands, so positive things from that perspective. Likewise with respect to environmental concerns as well. However, you can always do more, and we've got two final questions to put you. Actually, three. First of all, where can people go to, Helena, to find out more about the sort of things we've been talking about today and actually say, OK, we've heard a little bit more about this. Is there a particular go-to website you would recommend?
There is, yes. It's on the Legal & General Investment website under Own Your World. So if you type in the Legal & General /investment, then you'll be taken to it and find out some more. And I'm also happy to follow up. Actually, this is one area where we just need to have a little sort of thing coming across. Sorry, Alex, just to since we pre-record, we're going to have something that's a little easier for me to say. You're the first person that's asked that. So can we get you
all will
that
work
little
out
link?
Personally, sorry. And that is quite simply why you are the best head of personal investing at Legal and General Investment Management ever. Two final questions. We'll wrap up with these. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for your good self?
Oh, definitely. Great questions. Thank you for those, Alex. And yes, quite wide-ranging. So thank you very much, and easy on the technology front too. So
well, the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future? Will you be kind enough to return?
I would love to, if you'll have me back. Thank
you. Of course. Dame Helena Morrissey, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you.
Saving the planet. Well, the programme has actually taken us from Gibraltar through, indeed, the employment law with respect to maternity prejudice, etc., through Stephanie Romaszewski's sleep competition.
And aliens.
Of course. Richard Fitzwilliam's In the Fade, Leave No Trace, Donald Trump. You could connect those things into a wonderful sentence and I mean, go there. Ian Lennox, of course, when he wasn't being invaded by the French football team. Dame Helena Morrissey, Dr. Dawn Harper, Simon Wallace, Nina Scaro, and most importantly, of course, Christian Arkabowitz and the awesome Ellie Sample, University of Lincoln Director of Communications, Development and Marketing. Have you enjoyed your return to the programme, Ellie?
What a show, Alex. You are a god of radio.
Oh, please, you know, gods and goddesses. You know, let's work our way through that. And any final things that Christian, who's sticking around over the summer, and indeed our listener might still think, I want to check out the University of Lincoln. I want to see where that's going. Because the next open day is September the 29th, which is way ahead of that. You see that
you
straight
so
on there,
on
the message.
I'm going to find out about promotion for you, Alex. You're doing really well. We've got amazing things coming up. Clearing 4th of August for our alumni event. There's a teachers conference coming up. So if you're a teacher and if you like Dame Caroline Duffy, the Poet Laureate, then you should book in for our teachers conference. Summer in the City coming up.
Only yesterday, Caroline Duffy was there at the start of a wonderful Festival of Creativity. If you use that as an acronym, it's not the most solid acronym that you actually would have, but I'll step away from that for obvious reasons, really, but still. I thought you'd just get it, Christian, but it's okay. It was a wonderful Festival of Creativity, thanks to Giles and company. We put together a range of things with that. Caroline Duffy launched that, and she's back again. She's fantastic.
I know, she's back again. She is amazing. And we're doing a competition with Caroline for Armistice, and we've had 544 poems submitted, and we'll be creating a book of those poems with Caroline Duffy.
Brilliant. And we're off now to hopefully have a chat about a possible flash fiction competition we're looking for 2019.
So yes, that would be fantastic.
Just a little tease there, sort of line from that perspective. Yeah. Christian, back with us next week?
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Ellie, back with us in the very near future, no doubt?
Oh, please, if you have me.
And the family holiday is there, with not too much information with respect to, obviously, the Oaks. We're working on that basis. Actually, we've forgotten. You're writing. We mentioned The Lincolnshire Puppy, of course. The other book that's out there, of course, is?
Bastion and Dark Knights Beware the Demons.
Dark Knights Beware the Demons.
Be careful.
It's actually beaten the line we had from Dr. Dawn Harper about you were not being sexy. So. It's a strange show. Stay tuned to Siren Radio. You know it's going to open up your minds to a whole new range of activities, as indeed the University of Lincoln does. Can we say farewell?
Farewell.
Adieu, Alfie the same.
No fighting. We got the refugees. No fighting. No fighting. Shakira, Shakira.
I never really knew that she could dance like this. She make a man wanna speak Spanish. Como se llama?
Sí.
Bonita.
Sí.
Picasa.
Shakira, Shakira.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. So be wise. Sí. And keep on reading the signs of my body. I'm on tonight, you know my hips don't lie. And I'm starting to feel it's right. All the attraction, the tension. See, baby, this is perfection.
Hey, girl, I can see your body moving, and it's driving me crazy. And I didn't have the slightest idea until I saw you dancing.
Yeah. And when you walk up on the dance floor, nobody can not ignore the way you move your body, girl.
And everything's so unexpected, the way you right and left it,
so you can keep on shaking it.
Never really knew that she could dance like this. She make a man wanna speak Spanish. Como se llama?
Sí.
Bonita.
Sí.
Because
Shakira.